listeners. Thank you for tuning in. I am Ella Morton, as always, and I'm really peeved. I'm so freaking cheesed off. I'm trying to swear less lately, so I'm not using genuine profanity, but I'm freaking annoyed because I keep recording these interviews with really cool people who are interesting and funny and have profound things to say, and then I get home, still on the high of this conversation, and I'll fire up my garage band, or garage, whatever, how you pronounce it, and I will listen, and gradually, as the interview progresses, there'll be this and it's happened again, and I'm so annoyed, because I had this great interview with Jezebel Express, who's a really cool burlesque performer here in New York, and it's not good audio, and I'm going to release it anyway, and I've made it a bit shorter, and I've tried to cut out the most egregious ear violation bits, but it is not good quality, and I apologize for that, and I am making a plea, an appeal to you right now. If you know how I can fix this problem, kindly get in touch. You can tweet me at Ella Morton, you can email me ella@ellamorton.net, send a carrier pigeon, whatever. I need to fix this problem, because it's really harshing my mellow. It may just be that I'm using a relatively cheap microphone, and I'm a bit povo at the moment, as we say in the homeland, so I can't afford to upgrade my whole setup here, but if you have any suggestions, please tell me. And in the meantime, again, I apologize for the quality of the ensuing audio you're about to hear, but please stick with it, because Jezebel Express and I talk about some really interesting stuff. I talk about forcing my coworkers to watch me dance in my underwear. We talk about naked women. It's compelling stuff. So please listen. You'll hear from me again at the end. And I love you all.
Sitting next to me is Jezebel Express, the fastest girl in town, according to rumor. She is a burlesque performer, burlesque event producer, what else? Instructor at the School of Burlesque. And we have Shanae.
And then Victor.
Oh.
Pretty well covered.
Citizen of the Commonwealth.
Oh, very important.
I think you're like, I have this thing on Ellipsis where there's been like, of the eight now, interviews I've done, approximately 5 or 6 people are citizens of the Commonwealth. And I think you are the second Canadian, so welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Shout out to Newfoundland. How do you pronounce it?
Newfoundland, it rhymes with understand.
Newfoundland. See, I always say Newfoundland.
It's okay, there are a lot of creative pronunciations.
Okay, I like Newfoundland though. Understand, Newfoundland. So perhaps we should define burlesque quickly, just so people out there have not had the pleasure of being acquainted with it.
So burlesque is theatrical striptease, and there are lots and lots of ways to define burlesque. You can see lots of debates on the internet about what is burlesque and what is not burlesque.
Oh my goodness, yes.
But most of the time it involves big costumes and removal of clothing. So I think that's a pretty good working definition to start.
Yes. If you've seen the movie Burlesque, it's not like that. not in New York in its current incarnation at least.
Less clothing.
Less
take it off more slowly.
Yeah, and a bit more rough around the edges really. Mm-hmm. It's interesting the spectrum of reactions to burlesque, because I was out with a friend the other night, and we were catching up for a drink after several months of not seeing one another. And he was doing the whole, what are you up to these days? And I said, well, I'm writing this book, and I'm getting more involved in the burlesque world. And he was like, I'm going to stop you there. Just so you know, I hate burlesque. And I was like, what? How? Why? And he said, well, I've actually only been to one show, but it was really bad. And it was like trying to be meaningful and wasn't, and didn't make sense, and he just hated it, and he had such a strong opinion against it. But I don't know, I think I've been involved in the burlesque world for so long that it surprises me when people have such a strong reaction against it.
I mean, I think there are a couple of things going on. One is that female nudity is threatening.
Yeah.
So unless it's presented in a way that's really palatable, I think people are not always excited about it. So you lose some people there. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that there is lots of bad burlesque out there. If you only went and heard one band in a small bar, And you had no information about how long they'd been playing together or how skilled they were, and it was the only music you ever listened to, and the band was awful. You might say, I hate music. But that isn't really how we approach music. It is how we approach burlesque. It definitely has a rap in some places. Some people aren't comfortable with them taking their clothes off. I hear that it's stripping for fat girls. I mean, all the time. Or that it's housewives getting up there and shaking so they can feel empowered and good about themselves.
Oh, man. I love
people say this all the time. People come to my class and say these things to me. And I think I might not be your target audience for converting to hatred of burlesque. But, there's lots of people who think that.
I find that there's some people who say, like, can't you get your daddy issues out in a less naked way?
And the answer is no.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so interesting because, I mean, I've been to some burlesque classes and, you know, you go around the circle and you say, why are you here? What's brought you to burlesque? And a lot of women do talk about, you know, I felt really bad about myself and I felt bad about my body and I feel like this is empowering. And there's sort of a fine line between becoming confident about who you are through burlesque and then it seems like some people use empowerment as a kind of a way of justifying something to themselves they're not sure about.
Sure. I mean, I think that if burlesque is empowering, that's fine. It definitely is for lots of people. There are also bunches of people saying, well, it empowers me, so you have to like it. And that's not really true. But, you know, people come to burlesque for different reasons and from different places, and I don't think there's any art form that everyone comes to from the same place, but I do think there are very few forms that people are asked to answer for their intent in so frequently as they are in burlesque. I mean, people want to know why you're taking your clothes off. What gives you the right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you justify thinking that your body is okay to share or that your sexuality is okay to share? Why is that okay for you? And people come to that and they want an answer. They want to know very clearly why you think that you get to do this thing that, you know, you're not supposed to do.
And why people should clap for it. And
sure. Well, I mean, whether people should clap for it is a different question in my opinion.
I mean, that's another thing. Like, I have a bit of a conflict because I get annoyed when people whistle at me on the street or make comments on the street. But at the same time, I've been part of burlesque shows where the host will say, channel your inner construction worker and hoot and holler when these girls take their clothes off. And I sort of think to myself, like, I get a bit overanalytical and go, well, what does it mean? Why is it okay in one context and not in another? And am I being a hypocrite?
Sure. I don't think that's overanalytical. I mean, I think it's smart to ask those questions. You know, it's responsible to ask those questions. But I think that inviting people to look at you in a certain way in a certain space can reasonably be expected to engender a certain reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, walking to work may not be a situation where you're looking for the same reaction or you expect the same reaction. I think there are different levels of danger involved. Walking down the street, having men catcall you and follow you feels very different than getting on a stage being aware that you're doing something that people might catcall and holler at.
Sure.
So there are lots and lots of differences, but I think, you know, we always come back to that question, I think, of thinking sort of burlesque artists and thinking people who call themselves feminists, dropping the F word, God forbid. You know, it's stuff that we think about. Why is it okay? And there are also lots of people who say, well, you're just falling into the trap of the patriarchy and,
yeah,
you know, it's the male gaze and you're inviting it and, it's a thorny area. It's not something I don't know.
I guess I justify it because I see that in burlesque audiences it tends to mostly, or at least 50% women, and a lot of the burlesque producers are female, and it just feels like a different intent. I read this thing on, I need to attribute it properly, I can't remember who said it, but it said that the difference between stripping and burlesque is that stripping is about the audience's fantasy and burlesque is about your own.
There's probably Joe.
Yeah, probably.
Joe does make the distinction, yeah. Joe Hood, who's the headmistress of the New York School of Burlesque, my boss.
Hi, Joe.
She does make the distinction, and I think it's a useful one when you know, people talk about nightclub stripping and commercial stripping and burlesque, and you hear lots of burlesque dancers say, well, I'm not a stripper.
Mm.
And lots of strippers say, well, I don't do that burlesque shit. You know, it goes both ways, but there definitely is a class issue there, I think, where burlesque dancers are very concerned about being seen as a pole dancer or, a nightclub stripper. And Jo makes this distinction, and she knows a lot about both worlds, and she says, you know, when you do nightclub striptease, you are concentrating on one person at a time, because that's the way that you make money, is you engage one person at a time, and that's what turns into your lap dance, or your private show.
Right.
And so there's that intent, and there's that engagement with the person, and it's financial. It's commercial. It's based on how you make the most money. And in burlesque, often people are engaging an entire audience, because you make your money, selling the show to the audience, and more importantly than the money of anyone who is involved in burlesque will tell you. there better be things more important than the money, or you're gonna run out of patience with it really quickly. Is that you're doing a show for a group of people, and it's theatrical, it has that presentational aspect where you're...
And there's often a narrative or a theme. What do you get out of burlesque? Why did you start doing it, and why did you keep doing it?
Well, I started because many, many years ago when I was in college, I saw a burlesque show. I was majoring in dance, and I saw a burlesque show that was touring. And this is like jazz dancing, but with more glitter and less clothes. I could get behind that. And I meant to learn more about it, and I didn't when I was in college, honestly. And then I was living in Newfoundland, a little rock in the middle of the ocean. And I went to a show called The Evening of Burlesque, and I was very excited, and I thought, more jazz, glitter, it'll be great. So I showed up, and there wasn't really any striptease in it.
Hmm.
It was like a, kind of like a talent show with some body songs, and a guy who did a monologue in drag, very much in the spirit of burlesque, but no striptease. And so it was part of this dance organization I wanted to be a part of called Neighborhood Dance Works. They're actually a great organization still in Newfoundland, but supports lots and lots of modern dance, which is my jam. And I had met these women, and I said, yeah, I'll come to your show. So afterwards they came up and they said, well, what did you think? I said, well, it was great, but if you're going to call it a burlesque show, there should probably be some striptease in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you're totally right, we'll call you next time. And they only did these a couple times a year, so like twice a year. And I said, oh, okay, because I was nervous and I didn't know what to say. And I thought, they won't call me. And then they called me. And I didn't know what to do, and I felt like I couldn't back out of it, so I wore a long, sparkly red dress, and I took off my gloves for 3.5 minutes.
Wow!
To Jessica Rabbit's song from
Roger
Rabbit.
Way to stretch out that tease.
I did indeed.
I bet when they saw your fingertips, they went, wow.
I didn't even show them the last hand the first time I did it. I took the glove off, and you could see my wrist, and then I put my hand in front of myself and dropped the glove off the other side, and left facing back, and everyone loved it.
So how do you split your identity? Totally separate?
No, it's, there are newspaper articles and media and stuff that link me way back to my real name and my stage name, and I've choreographed lots of dance for like theater companies, and sometimes they use my real name, sometimes use my stage name, and newspapers aren't always careful about it. So it's like, if you look hard enough, you can find out who I am, and of course, that's okay. I think all of those things are who I am. There's not going to be anyone who's very close to me that this is going to be a secret from, certainly.
I tried to keep the world separate for a long time because, well, especially when I was working on camera at Rockapoon.
Sure.
And I remember I had this conversation where I talked to my boss and said, I'm considering getting more involved in the burlesque world, and how would you feel if there were photos of me on the internet not wearing a whole lot of clothing. And I expect him to be like, no, don't do it. He said, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you can negotiate, and there are definitely lots of people who are limited by that. There are lots of people who have government jobs or teaching jobs or are in professions where they can't have their identity known, and then it's like, it's unfortunate that is the case, but it is a reality for lots of people. And
it must be so hard now with the internet, though. Like, it's so...
Sure. I mean, it was very different, like, when I started, it was like, people didn't have camera phones. There was no Twitter. There was no way of instantly recording and sharing what you have just experienced with people. So it is something different, and it's been an adjustment for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. I remember the first burlesque experience I had was I started writing for a burlesque magazine in Sydney a few months before I moved to New York, and so I had to get acquainted with the burlesque world, and this friend of mine who was editing the magazine took me to this show, and it was for women only. I actually saw a man turn up at the door and get turned away.
Oh my.
They were really hardcore about it.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. And so we walked into this place that was in this bar at Sydney Uni. It's kind of run down. And I just remember walking in, and there were all these women with like sleeve tattoos and just crazy different aesthetics and weird hairstyles and like rockabilly looks. And I just kind of looked around in awe, and I was like, I didn't know that ladies that are allowed to dress like that. Like it seemed really cool. And then these performances happened, and there were girls up there like milking fake cows and then like pouring milk on themselves. And I was just like, the girls have gone wild. The girls have gone wild.
In the best possible way.
Yeah, it was really kind of, I feel like I acquired so much secondhand confidence from it. I was just like, oh, I didn't realize that you could behave this way. It was definitely an indelible experience. And it seems like everyone who gets into burlesque has that initial rush of like, oh, there are so many possibilities. Oh, this new world has opened up. But I find it even more interesting and endearing when something does go wrong and the performer reacts to it well.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I think, you know, a mistake is an opportunity. I was comfortable with this. Like, a mistake is an opportunity to make the audience love you more than they possibly ever could have if everything had gone right. Because when those moments happen, they remember that you're a human being,
mm-hmm.
and that it's live theater, and that there's something actually happening on stage. People are dying for things to actually happen. Like, the way that our culture functions now,
yeah.
it's repeating. It's everything is telling everyone how great your life is on Facebook. And telling them what you just did on Twitter, and posting a picture of your perfectly composed meal and your glass of wine by it that you just, you know, wanted to show one of your boyfriends if you were in the next place, and you snapped it. Everything is so PR. And when you just get to see something actually happen,
I love it.
Yeah, it's like this drink of water in a desert of, you know, little grains of bullshit sand. So it's so wonderful, and people love that. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than real.
That applies to so many things. Like, I have this super dorky, love of, like, movements. And I love, like, if I have any crap day, I love, like, looking on YouTube for Seinfeld movements or something. Because I love that break. I love that moment of, well, this is human and this messed up and this is no longer rehearsed and contrived.
I mean, in some way, it reminds you that everything goes on. Like, things don't go as planned. And sometimes they go horribly awry, but there's always that next moment. Like, there's always something to be done. You can recover, or you cannot recover, but time will go on. Things will continue happening. And just getting to see that is, I don't know, in some way it's affirming. I kind of hate that word because it sounds so, like, yoga, but yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's a good life lesson, I think.
Make mistakes will be okay.
Don't be afraid. Well, I mean, don't intentionally sabotage your life, but.
Life lessons from that one.
Yeah, occasional mistakes are good. Do you know what I realized lately?
What?
I have, like, no female friends apart from you. And it's really, I'm really,
thank you.
That's the thing, I'm really self-conscious about it. Because I read this thing in Psychology Today, not today, but like that's the name of the publication, Psychology Today. And it was talking about how people who have mainly opposite sex friends don't trust people. And how, this is really messed up, this is gonna get really psychoanalytical, but I don't trust women. Because I feel like, what can I offer you? And I think I'm friends mostly with men because at least they can be attracted to me.
Sure.
Well, if they're not there.
Well, there's attention, but yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But if a woman wants to be friends with me, I'm like, why? I don't trust this.
Sure. Sure, no. What's I understand.
With that?
friendship is hard. Yeah. I mean, we just saying here it is. Sorry for all this stuff. And in addition to saying sorry for all the stuff, you're saying you like the rest of it, right? Like, it's good enough.
Yeah.
So I like to ask. Yeah, I've had a friend.
Me too. But I it worries me. How do I become friends with women? I don't know if it's because I feel competitive or I feel like I have nothing to offer. I think it's a low self-esteem thing.
I think women are also not socialized to be friends with one another.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of women in this culture are socialized to see each other as threats, and even if you don't feel that way, you're probably catching some of that. You know? Mm-hmm. And you know, burlesque in particular is full of, I think,
big egos.
Well, big and small egos, you know, it's like this big egos and kind of a love of attention, and those things intersect in interesting ways, in a bunch of interesting ways, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. God knows that applies to me, you know. I would describe myself that way as well. But yeah, I think about that too. I don't have very many female friends, and there is a way that men are easier to relate to, because
yeah,
there's a path for that. There's something, there are outcomes that you can expect, and there are ways that you can deal with them, because you've been dealing with them whether you like to or not,
mm-hmm.
you know, in those ways for most of your life. And it also feels good to feel attractive, you know, it feels good
yeah.
to
Yeah, but then I feel busy, because I'm like, is this a power thing? Am I just
become a dominatrix?
A succubus? It's really interesting though. I need strategy to become, because I'm always expecting betrayal.
Sure. Well, that's a, you know, I don't mean to get into this on the podcast, but I hear you there.
But
it's one of those other shoe situations. You're waiting for the other shoe.
Yeah.
And so you think, oh, you know, and there's a way in which female friendships can be really intimate, and it's hard to have that in a non-romantic relationship and to know what to do with it, because you don't have that very much. It's not something that you deal with a lot, you know?
Plus, I think I hop back to high school and this feeling of you have to compete with people, but you can't make it obvious that you're trying so hard.
Sure.
So it's this real kind of underhanded, like, I didn't study for that test. I bet I'll do badly.
Right.
Whereas you stayed up the whole night
and you think, oh, I ate something.
Yeah. Oh, that's just my natural talent. Sorry.
What?
God, man. So I listen to this podcast that I'm always talking about called Secular Looking Like Cities with Sarah Benincasa. And I got my mum to listen to it one week because it had a lot of stuff about depression and mental health. But it also had a lot of stuff about sex and a lot of stuff about Sarah talking about like intimate details of her sexual behavior. And my mum listened to this and she was like, oh, that was a little bit much for me. Because I can't relate to you youngins sharing all these details of your life online. But sometimes it does make me think, like, if I were ever to run for Congress, which isn't going to happen, spoiler alert, I would be screwed by all the stuff online. But I'm a warrior, so would I.
No, because I can't imagine ever wanting a life where who I am and who I had to appear to be were so different.
Mm.
So I just don't see myself being in a situation where I would have to pretend. Like, it's one of those, it just seems incredibly implausible to me that anything would be so important to me that I would be willing to just lock out entire parts of myself.
Yeah.
So, I can't imagine the situation in which that would happen. Neither of us are going to run for Congress.
That's true. I think I need to have a little talk to myself about boundaries though. I guess I've become a little desensitized to burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
And for 7 months I was involved in a show called Beatles Burlesque,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool. It was live band playing Beatles songs, and all the acts were songs from the Beatles or the British Invasion. And I did go-go there. So to the uninitiated, go-go dancing is when you before these burlesque sets start, and in between sets, you get up on the stage or on like a special go-go bench, and you're usually wearing some kind of sparkly, lingerie, fringy type thing, and you just go to town doing really energetic dancing. But, so I was doing go-go, and I
just because I thought it was a cool show, I invited a bunch of people, including some people from work, and it didn't seem like a big deal to me. I mean, I wasn't doing the main act on the stage, so I wasn't stripping. But then a few of my friends came, and like, one or two of them came up to put dollars in my little go-go shimmy belt. And I just, like, they just seemed really embarrassed about it. And I was sort of like, oh, that's cute. And then I was like, maybe I'm traumatizing them. And maybe I'm forcing them to see me in a way that they don't want to see me.
Well, thank God they're adults with internet connections. You could have Googled burlesque before they paid money to see your show.
But see, I don't know if it's...
It's not your responsibility though.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's the fact that, I don't think it's the fact that they saw burlesque, I think it's the fact that I work with them and maybe it was unfair of me to force them to see me in that context.
Shouldn't you force them? I invite people from non-nightlife communities to my stuff and I say, by the way, I'm gonna take some clothes off. If you're uncomfortable with that, when they announce this name, you should just go to the bathroom or get a drink. Or I'm on in the first half. Come see this later. I just say, by the way, there'll be people taking their clothes off. There's lots of like live jazz and great acrobats and contortionists and aerialists. But this will be there too. Like I just FYI everyone, because not everybody knows, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'd be pretty clear about it because I don't want people to feel shanghaied, but are you allowed to say that?
Shanghaied
thing? I don't even know.
I don't know what it means. You know how most jazz performers have a tagline and a shtick? What are they known for?
So
what's your
shtick? What's your gimmick? I don't know. I mean, I hate to even say this because I think it's... If I were to choose, this would not be my gimmick, but I think it is. At Slipper and backstage, James Habacker, he's the owner, he's the proprietor and the artistic director of Slipper, and said to me one night right before I went on stage, "You know what I love about you, Jezebel?" And I said, "What, James?" And he said, "Nobody expects you to move the way you do."
Is that a compliment?
I think that, you know, I think I'm a classically trained dancer, got a BFA. I'm a bigger woman, and people make lots and lots of assumptions about what it means to be, you know, larger than average size. Mm-hmm. And I get up and everyone's always really shocked that I can dance. And further than that, I think they're really shocked that they find me attractive, or that there's something sexy about what I do, or my body, or my persona, and I see that a lot. I mean, a lot of what I do is very classic striptease. It's very, like, pretty stuff, with fan dancing, and so big, giant ostrich feather fans. Everything's really luxurious and old glamour. I tend not to rely on narrative as much, so I don't have a story. If you see someone like Nasty Canasta, is brilliant. She always has a great story. Something hilarious always happens in her act. And if someone said, you know, well, what was it about? I could tell you in great detail what happened in her act. And a lot of what I do is me getting up and being sexy. And it has an arc and it has, you know, pacing and dynamics and stuff. But it's, a lot of it is what we call straight strip. And there aren't very many. I'm one of the last people in burlesque I think you'd expect to get up and just say, "I'm beautiful. This is my body. You want me." And so there is a way in which that is my gimmick, is that I do the moves and the dance that I think like a classically beautiful kind of performer would be expected to do. And I do them in a way that works, even though I'm in some way abnormal, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, abnormal though. That's not a good word.
It's not a bad word. It's, I mean, I'm not normal. I'm not, statistically I'm not normal.
Yeah, and I guess so. But it must be frustrating because I've talked to you before about how sometimes when people review your act, they focus on the way you look and not
sure,
like the technicality.
Absolutely. I mean, I get tons of reviews that are like, oh, this bodacious babe, or this like busty, or like ultra curvy, or like, you know, she's bigger than average, but she's hot. Seriously. In spite of.
What's it like when you are on stage and you know that the audience doesn't like you? Because the things like stand-up comedy, it feels really, I imagine, it feels really horrible and vulnerable. But in burlesque, you are literally naked. So, how does that feel?
I mean, it feels bad when when an audience doesn't like you, but I think you have lots of chances to turn it around. I think that sometimes people don't like you because they are unsure how to react to you, either because they're unsure how they feel about nudity, or they are unsure how they feel about your body, or they are unsure about how they feel about their feelings about your body. Mm-hmm. I get that third one a lot. I get a lot of bachelor parties that come in, and they are so confused. Because they don't know if they're supposed to be attracted to me, and they don't know how they're supposed to act, and they're interested, but they don't know what their friends will think that they're interested. And you see these, like, incredibly conflicted kind of things people are going through. Like, I know that if there is some way that being on stage provokes people, me being on stage, my body, my persona, what I do, there is a way that provokes people and moves them. And so it doesn't feel great when people don't like you, but I think that having a personality helps a lot. Showing them that you're having fun helps. Interacting directly with the audience and letting them know that you're not scared of them, or that you're not, or that you're not against them, because they do feel confronted. I think sometimes the audiences feel confronted when they're faced with something they don't know how to react to. And you can really go full throttle with confronting them. There are performers who do that, absolutely, and sometimes it's very effective. It's not usually the approach I use. I usually, you know, I think you catch more flies with honey. So I like to make people think, I don't know how I feel about this. And you think, you're supposed to feel really good about it. Enjoy it. Have fun.
Oh, okay. Yeah, huh.
So I definitely have a sense of winning people over sometimes.
Hi, me again. So I'm using a snowball microphone for those of you who are techie inclined and know about such things that might give you a clue as to what's going on. Also, you can find Jezebel Express on Twitter at Jezebel Express, and she has a website, jezebelexpress.com, which has all her various goins on about town, since she is the fastest girl in town. I've seen her perform many times, and it's a sight to behold, let me tell you. I'm Ella Morton still, and you can find me on Twitter at Ella Morton or at ellipsispodcast.com. And if you have any suggestions for people or types of people that you would like me to interview on this podcast, within reason, I mean, let's be realistic, let me know. Email me, tweet me, whatever you like. Thanks for tuning in. I will see you next time. Bye!